Welcome to Off Court, the Business of Sport podcast, where business and sports culture meet. Let's go. Kick it off, Robbie.
Welcome to the Sports and Culture podcast by Off Court. Now, we're only in the early days of this podcast, but I've really been on a mission to have some more diversity in our guests, and in particular, some amazing women who are, in this case, quite literally kicking goals in the industry. We are privileged to have Chloe Malloy with us today, one of the AFLW stars playing a trade for Collingwood. And let me set the scene by reeling off a few of these. So, drafted pick 3 in the 2017 draft, rising star, All-Australian, club best and fairest, league runner-up. But have I missed anything? I don't know.
No, you've
been only just getting started. Anyway, I had to put that out there. Welcome to the pod, Chloe.
Thank you, Robbie. It's nice to be on.
And did you enjoy that wrap-up?
Yeah, I'm blushing. I don't know if you can see through the camera, but yeah, thank you. I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, no, some people like a big wrap-up. Some people aren't so impressed, but I feel like I'm obliged to do it, because when you have stars like yourself on the pod, you know, you've got to give them a wrap-up. But what's been happening anyway? How are you?
I am well. I must admit you have a very long list of achievements also. You are very humble yourself. Okay, I will. All right. No. I've been good. Just kind of getting through lockdown, training, kind of ebbs and flows through it all. But at the end of the day, I've got a roof over my head and I'm financially stable. So in a way, I'm sort of rich for this lockdown, which I am very grateful for.
Love that. We were just saying off air that we are both very fortunate to be in that situation. However, we are allowed to complain just a little bit, you know. It's been a tough 18 months. I think, you know, you were just saying you've had a little bit more bad news in regards to the footy side and the VFLW.
Yes, that the grand final is postponed indefinitely, so I don't know when that'll be played. But yeah, that's the horrible. I mean, that is bad news, and it's bad for myself, and also bad for the VFLW girls that have just had this season that literally has just dragged on. I mean, COVID has affected a lot of us in many, many ways, but for the athletes, yeah, it's been hard, and everyone's got their own definition of what hard is in these past 18 months. But yeah, it's pretty suckish news.
Yeah, so let's touch on that. So like, COVID's been a shitstorm for everyone, and particularly the sports industry. How has that been? Like, because 18 months is, well, it's been, I think it might even be more than 18 months. Anyway, it's been a long time, and a lot has come and gone since then. How has overall it kind of affected you?
Well, the first time COVID popped up was in 2 seasons ago now in the AFLW. That's when we kind of got the first taste of it and what it was like. I think we played a game in Brisbane with no crowd, and then all of a sudden it was we played North Melbourne in a final, and then we'd lost that final. So we went down to the pub for, you know, celebratory drinks to celebrate the season, and then that's when the news came out that the season was cancelled. So, yeah, it's been around for way longer than any of us would like, but that was the first taste of the impact on footy that it would have. And then from there, yeah, it's just been kind of like coming and going. We had that massive lockdown. Motivation was at a friggin' low because with the season got cancelled, and then it was like we've got to prepare in lockdown. I moved home with my parents and had no one to train with, so the self-motivation was like absolutely nowhere on the best of days. So it's been unique, very unique. No one's ever gone through it before. And trying to find self-motivation was something that I really, really struggled with, and also the mental health side of things that really got to me, living the same day over and over again was a nightmare sometimes. So yeah, it was shit, and we're still feeling the impacts, which I think can bring up a bit of anxiety, especially coming into the new season. It's inevitable that COVID's going to pop up again. It's just like this annoying little thing that, you know, we become content and it's like, oh, we'll be good. Like, we've got crowds now, capacities, you know, increasing. And then it just like pops up and reminds you, hey, I'm still here. Like, your lives are still cool. Like, I'm still here. Don't forget about me. There's a bit of anxiety going into the next season regarding what it's going to look like. I just hope that we can get through it, and we've had so long now that we are as prepared as we can be for an AFLW season. We see it play out because, yeah, footy's something that's kept me going through all of this.
Yeah. Do you think the players and the people around the clubs are a bit more resilient now? I mean, it's almost sad that we have to be so resilient because, you know, you don't know what's going to come up tomorrow.
I think, yes, definitely more resilient, and that's not by choice either. That's by the fact that we've had things pop up within 24 hours. Like, just recently it was like, let's celebrate our donut day. Like, we had zero cases, and then all of a sudden it was like, hey, lockdown. And so you're like, well, holy moly, it's just a mind, you know, a mind fuck in a way. And you either become resilient, and it definitely takes its toll, but it's out of no choice that you kind of normalize being told bad news. And I said this to you before we jumped on, but yeah, you normalize getting bad news. Like, and then it's not, you know, you get worse news. So that bad news isn't as bad anymore. Like, a lockdown again, we're like, oh yeah, extended lockdown. We're like, oh, saw that one coming. Like, yeah, I don't think we've been given a choice. It's kind of like a sink or swim. And if you are sinking, you know, there are resources, and the AFLPA, in terms of being an AFLW athlete, have been really, really good in reaching out and giving us multiple resources to ensure that, you know, we don't sink. But yeah, it's a weird one. You've got no choice but to kind of cop it on the chin, because there's literally nothing we can do about it except for try get through each day as best as we can, and do our part in playing a part in getting this COVID to kind of go away.
For sure. Yeah, there's a big announcement today with the AFLW now expanding to the full 18 teams, which is amazing news.
Definitely amazing. It probably came way earlier than I had thought, especially with COVID and the impacts that had on footy clubs with redundancies and financial debt. But I guess it's some light in a pretty dark time, is knowing that we're going to have 18 teams, and I think it'll be an interesting period for the next few years, because we will have, you know, it's inevitable that the talent's going to be diluted because we're introducing four new teams, and the quality might drop a little bit. But from there, at least these teams that are 7 years behind all the inaugural teams will not have to make up for missed time. So it was always going to happen. It was either going to be in drips or drabs, or they're just going to go whack, rip the Band-Aid off. Let's introduce 18 teams, deal with the consequences, so to say, of the quality and skill levels and the diluted talent and the player movement. Let's deal with that in a few years. And then it's kind of like a long-term plan, so to say, that in a decade's time, they're already like, well, we've got 18 teams. All we've got to worry about is getting a full season in.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think GWS and Gold Coast came in around my draft year, and I was like, shit, yeah, like, you know, here's an opportunity. Didn't eventuate, unfortunately. But the talent pathway for the women's talent pathway, I suppose, has really grown in recent years. And my understanding is, based on what I can observe, it's now pretty much mirrored to the men's talent pathway. Tell me about your journey to the AFLW.
So I got a little bit of a taste of the pathway that now is in place for the youth girls. So I started my footy journey back with Auskick. So, like, well, as a little girl, played up to the age where you had to take the boots off, put the footy down and go play another sport, because girls didn't play footy back then. So I came back into the system through Calder Cannons, which is a NAB League team. I was overage at that time, but because I hadn't played, hadn't played for so long, I was able to come in as a top ager. Had 1 year with them, and then played senior level with Diamond Creek, and from there was recognised and was drafted. So I had a little bit of a taste of this pathway that now is available, but, you know, we see the likes of Georgie Press-Parkis and Charlie Rowbottom this year, who have gone through the pathway of playing footy as a little girl, all the way up to the NAB League, all the way up to academies, VFLW teams, aligned VFLW teams with AFLW teams. So they've gone the whole way, whereas I've kind of gone, done something else, come back, and now enjoying my footy and loving it. But it's a what if of, you know, what if I never stopped playing footy? Like, what, how much better of a player would I have been, or would I have fallen out of love with footy? But it is comforting to know that there is that pathway, and growth is going to happen. And with growth comes better skills, better quality matches. And the more we have a footy in our hands, the better we're going to get. So that was my journey. I had a little bit of a taste of it, which I'm grateful for. But, yeah, it's good that there is a pathway, and I think it should mirror the boys, and I hope that the AFLW can soon mirror the AFL.
Hey, guys, if you're enjoying this podcast, I would love if you could screenshot it, chuck it up on your Instagram story, and tag us at offcourt.sport. All right, let's get back to it. Do you think we'll look back on that gap that you just mentioned in, well, I'm looking back on it now and thinking, you know, basically what the fuck, but between, like, I remember when I was playing sort of under 12s and maybe even up to under 14s, there were some really talented girls running around because, you know, obviously playing in the same comp at that time. And then, you know, as you said, kind of forced to stop playing at a certain level. And then that's it. And I think at that point, you know, probably, you know, under 12s, the physical gap's not that huge. So everyone's kind of on an even sort of playing field. And then obviously, you know, the physical element starts creeping in. But the fact that I feel like we're going to look back at that and go, what, you know, as an industry, were we thinking to just say, oh, no, that's it?
Yeah. And how I look back now and I'm like, that's ludicrous that I had to stop playing footy just because I was a girl. Like, that just makes no sense in the society that we live in these days. That's totally not accepted. And you know what? I look back and probably look, this is probably the mindset that I've got. I look back and I'm like, I'm grateful that we had that because it's now been the catalyst for change, and we know what we won't accept. And telling a little girl that she can't play a certain sport because she's a female is just not something we'll accept anymore. So it is something you look back on, you go, oh my God, how did we ever allow that to happen? How did we ever allow a mum and a dad to tell their little daughter, hey, you can't play footy with the boys anymore. You know, your best mates that you play with, like, that can't happen anymore. So yeah,
crazy.
It's crap that it happened, but it's been a push for change, and it's a change for the better. So I can't see us ever going back to having to tell little girls that they can't do something anymore. And even little boys and girls, the society that we're in, and it's been a push for change.
For sure. How far off do you think we are from the AFLW becoming a full-time professional league for the athletes as opposed to semi-professional, I suppose?
Well, it's a good question. I think everyone will have their opinions on it, and we're all chair experts at the best of times. But if I speak on my behalf and what I see it looking like, it needs to be a slow progression because I speak about my story. I'm working a full-time job, so I can't just give up a full-time job. And I've studied towards getting this. I've spent hours and money into lining myself for a successful career in the industry, which is the media for me. So it kind of needs to be like a slow burner, and I don't want to jump from a stable full-time job to, you know, it could be full-time for a year and then we have to go back part-time because it's not, we can't fund it, or it's not stable enough. So I don't know how they're going to do it in a sense that I don't think you can literally just go semi to full-time straight away. It's got to be a slow build and a slow progression because there are girls that make a lot of sacrifices, and giving up their job is not something that they'll take lightly. So what it looks like, maybe going part-time in a sense that we come in on 3 days maybe, play on the weekend. I don't know. It'll be a weird phase, very weird phase. And
yeah,
I, yeah, no idea what it looks like. But hey, I would love to play football full time. So if that's the end, that's the end goal. Yeah. What the in between looks like?
It's
no idea.
Yeah. Well, look, I've been keeping tabs on some of the women's soccer leagues, particularly overseas. And I've noticed some of what's happening, because obviously, I mean, it's a progressional thing, right? But some clubs are signing, say, a handful of full-time athletes who – female athletes who kind of drive the program. So I wonder if that might be the model where, like, we have, like, the – is it the tier one or, like, the marquee – system where they
tier one, two, three, yeah,
So maybe the tier ones have become full time. Just hire me. Just if the AFL wants to send me a proposal,
yeah. Have your tier ones, your full time, your tier two, your part. Yeah. Then you'll get discrepancies in talent, but it needs to start somewhere. So I'm gonna pass your number on to the big dogs at the AFL, yeah, and be like, Robbie Ball's onto it. I'll pass the phone over.
Yeah, 100%. No, I think it's an interesting, because it's not a problem that's just in our game. It's a worldwide kind of progression that's happening at the moment, which is a great movement, obviously. And I think the women's game cops an unfair amount of criticism, I'd say. And you obviously have been very privy to this as an observer and an athlete. But, you know, I think in my opinion or my observation, it's some of that criticism is largely from men. And I think, you know, me personally, I love watching the AFLW. I think there's two things that I like about it. And the first thing is it's a different product to the AFL. I think as a consumer, you can't expect it to be the same product. And then when it's not the same product, go, oh, you know, it's not the same. It's not good enough. But it's different and it works. It's kind of evolving into its own style, which I actually really like watching. And it's only going to get better as more talent comes through and, you know, those pathways that we were talking through, talking about, continue to evolve. And the other thing that I love watching is, again, this is just my complete observation, but I just reckon the girls just get on with it. There's no carry on. There's no like, I think there's less playing for free kicks. I think there's probably less regard for their own safety. You know, I've played footy my whole life and, I've only had to stop due to concussions and I'm actually now just playing soccer for a bit of fun. But I've seen both footy and soccer as far as men's and women's, and I'm 100% certain that men carry on so much more with free kicks, with umpires or refs, and, you know, especially soccer when they go down, it's just like rolling around. But then you see on the pitch next to you, the girls just go hammer and tong, get hit, get back up again straight away. I don't know. Do you reckon? Or am I off the mark in that?
Nah, I think in some degree you are right. It could be because our games, well, in the AFLW sense, our games are shorter. So we're like, we haven't got time to complain to the umpire. but no, I do see your point. I mean, I was watching the Matildas and you know, some of their hits. I mean, some of them take a dive, but a lot of them get hit and get straight back up. I don't know what it is and I don't want to narrow it down to anything, but yes, I can see your point. Where you're coming from, we do tend to get on with it. Maybe it's, like I said, length of the games, but I loved your point about that we are two different products, and I think that's something that needs to be really emphasized, and I love that you see that, because they are two different products. You know, if I was to ask someone, you know, go to work every day, 9 to 5, train 3 nights a week from 6 till 9 p.m. and then do all the little extras in between, I'd be like, How do you think you're going to rock up to a game of footy or training some nights? Like, exactly. Tell me where your life battery, how much percentage of that is going to go into footy when you've got all these other things, you know, draining your energy, work. Some people have families, they study. So I'd love for someone to walk a day in the shoes of an AFLW player and then try get up for a game and try do some of the things that we do. So, yeah, the criticism is very harsh at times. I understand when you put on a stage, you're going to cop that. And I think to some degree, that's what sport is. People have their opinions and they're so passionate about it that with that comes a bit of criticism. And I think as athletes, we have to learn to take that a little bit. But yeah, there is a line and sometimes that is crossed harshly. But it's two different products, and I would love that if we could push that more, because we will never be the AFL. We will always be different, and I think that's what we want to keep, that point of difference with the AFLW. So unique, such a unique community.
Yeah, and it's a good point, but certainly not on the same scale, you know, as AFLW, but you know, in the VFL, which I suppose is considered a semi-professional league. One night at training, this is at Williamstown, coach Peter German at the time brought one of the players up who was a labourer. And I don't know the specifics of his job, but it was very laborious. And, you know, he basically just brought him up and he said, you know, X player is working, you know, he's up at 6 a.m., he's clocking off at 5, he's literally in the ditches, you know, digging holes or whatever he's doing. Amazing effort to even be here, you know, 3 nights a week and a game on the weekend. Cut him some slack, one. And two, you know, really championing that commitment, which is exactly the same in terms of, you know, the AFLW, where, as you said, everyone's working, everyone's got commitments or families, and, you know, this is another thing that needs to be juggled. So it is a fantastic effort, honestly.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I don't even have kids to look after, so there's some mums that play footy.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's everyone's got their own story and their own responsibilities and obligations. So, yeah, it's pretty massive. But in terms of like a brand sponsorship kind of scenario, one thing that I've noticed is, like, I've worked with a number of AFLW players and a number of AFL players, and my observation is that AFLW players are a lot better at putting themselves out there for those brand sponsorships. I don't know if it's a more of a willingness, or just, I don't know what, because you're obviously very, very good on your, I've sussed out your Instagram and I see some of those brand sponsorships. What do you reckon?
I do definitely think that the AFLW players are a lot more open, and you know, I don't want to be throwing shade at the boys here and because they are.
Go on, do it.
Nah, no way. I would never, not going to do it. But, you know, they've got things that they need to uphold, and we as AFLW athletes are so more accessible, and I think in a way we're more relatable because we work a normal job or we study. So, I mean, not that the boys don't study or work. I know there is a lot of them that do that and set themselves up for a life after their careers, but we don't get paid, you know, big bucks. So we've got to go do stuff outside of footy. And I think we understand that it's a two-way relationship with brands. You know, the more you give of yourself, the more you're going to get back. And we're probably in that phase where we want to grow. And to do that, we can't do it on our own. We need, on our own, good English. We can't do it on our own. We need brands backing us and pushing us and showing our faces and images in places because, you know, we want to be seen. The way you need to work on building a profile is being seen. And I think that's why AFLW girls are a lot more open to it. And I think we're a lot more, I don't want to say like organic, but we're just us. We never change. Nothing. We're always going to give our honest opinion. We'll always be open and honest, and we'll always show the side of us because for our whole week, we are just normal individuals going to work and then playing footy after hours and playing a game on the weekend. So, you know, the brands are just, I guess, platforms for us to be seen. And you know, the cliche of, you know, scratch someone's back and they'll scratch yours. So I think that's why AFLW athletes are so open to putting themselves out there, because we are in that phase of growth and know that that's what we need and can use to keep growing.
And from a brand or like commercial perspective, it opens up a whole new demographic, because obviously the AFLW is able to bring in a lot more eyeballs from a female demographic as well. So from a brand perspective, it's a great opportunity to be partnering with, you know, not only AFLW individuals or players, but, you know, also clubs and the league as a whole, if you're at that commercial level, to really, as you said, create that partnership or that longer lasting sustainable partnership. So yeah, the opportunity is definitely there for brands and businesses to connect with and grow with the league, I suppose.
Because it opens up a whole new audience that you once could never, well, not could never, but never tapped into, and the AFLW's kind of opened that door. And I think a lot of brands and companies and organisations have seen the benefits of involving themselves in this industry. So, yeah, it's almost like a competition to, you know, we want strong, independent, powerful women. And you can get that from a whole lot of different sporting codes, but, you know, AFLW probably is the new toy, and AFL, you know, the men's, it's part of Australian culture. So having women do it, it is a popular sport that is played across the country. So having an AFLW side, organisations and brands want to align themselves because they're like, this is a movement, and if we're not jumping on the train right now, then, you know, we could miss the stop.
That's a good way to put it. Have you had any moments where you've just kind of had to stop yourself and be like, wow, how did I get here? Like, sort of like a pinch yourself moment?
I would say no, but only because I have ensured that I've kept a good balance between life and footy, and not trying to be consumed by footy. But you do have pinch myself moments when people, you know, like yourself, even when you listed off all the accolades at the start, you kind of, I should embrace it more because I've earned those, but they're probably the moments you go that, oh, wow, like, I actually, you know, I'm half good at footy and I am part of a change. So they're probably the moments when
half good, that's very humble.
But they're probably the moments when you pinch yourself. Otherwise, I kind of just go day to day because I am literally so busy and I try not to get consumed by one thing too much. It's only, yeah, really when I stop and hear someone else say something to me is that when it makes you reflect and kind of go, oh, wow, yep, okay, like, yeah, I did achieve that. All that hard work did pay off and yeah, I was able to achieve some incredible things that I think I'll forever, you know, look back on and be like, how did I do that? And, you know, I'll tell my kids that I was the coolest athlete ever. Like, you know, I might not ever win another accolade, but at least I've got those to hang my hat on. So, yeah, there's always little pinch myself moments, but I try not to get too consumed by, footy.
No, I think that's a good mindset to have. There was a discussion on a previous episode of this podcast with Michael Wilson, who, if you don't know, is an AFL photographer. I'm sure you've seen his name pop up. And he was the one that took the now famous Taylor Harris photo. What did you make of that saga and I suppose the commentary around it? Because, I mean, it more or less went viral, right?
It definitely went viral. I mean, she's got a statue out of it now, so I think viral is an understatement. But I think it's, I mean, everyone, like, my opinion on it is that she was just brave enough and had the courage to call someone out for it all. And because that's actually, it's sad to say, that's quite normal to get those comments. And we've seen AFL players starting to call out, you know, profiles on their social media platforms, but it's quite normal to get comments like that. And she was just one athlete that called it out, and it just happened to be picked up and, you know, it kind of tornadoed into something. And like you said, it did go viral, everywhere. And then, People were sharing it from everywhere, and then the, you know, it kind of became the iconic kick, and it picked up that movement. So I think it was more a movement of not just calling AFLW critics out, like those ones. I think it was more of a just, we won't stand for this free speech used in a negative way on social media, the fact that everyone can just comment something without even knowing the person's story or the situation or what they're going through, or even just, you know, why waste 10 seconds of your time making a comment that's only just, you know, like I'll never understand, you know, why those people comment what they do. But it was iconic, and it was a movement that started a lot of change. So she was one athlete that did it, and Michael was a great photographer, so he took a great image of it and captured it. But there are a lot of athletes calling it all out at the minute, and I think that's that should continue, because it you know, if we're not doing anything about it, then it you know, it's just going to continue, and the more we call it out, hopefully you know, each time it is called out, it'll have a little bit of an impact on those people to stop with the bullshit comments and leave their opinions to themselves. If it's not going to, you know, if it's only going to cause hurt on someone, just swallow your words. Just don't even bother typing.
I mean, if only that logic was applied, it'd be a lot better place. But I mean, it takes a lot of leadership as well, right? From you know, in Taylor's example, to be able to call that out, because knowing she's going to get some stuff coming back at her. But you know, to be able to cop that backlash, which is totally unfair, it's actually creating, you know, a really positive movement, I think, as you mentioned. So it takes a bit of leadership and a bit of courage, or a lot of courage, to be able to do that.
Yeah, because you are going to cop it back, and then that's when I kind of worry for the athlete, because you call it out, you're probably going to cop it twofold, in a sense that, you know, you call it out, but then you're also going to receive criticism for calling it out. Like, it's kind of like a lose-lose situation, but there is a win in this, in that it did create that movement. So it does take a lot of leadership, and, you know, the recent racism discussions that we're having, like Eddie Betts is a great leader in that he calls it out, and he will stand up for what he believes in, and it does require a lot of courage. But I think athletes are pretty unique in that we are human, so we do want to stand up for what we personally believe in, and it does take a lot of courage. But yeah, someone's got to do it.
Yeah, and you know what I found interesting and frankly loved around, you know, the recent racism commentary and awareness has been, I notice a lot of Tex Walker's current and former teammates were kind of vocal about, hey, this is not okay, publishing on social media. Which I think sends a great message. It's not a personal attack on him. He's come out and said, you know, this is, I'm very sorry, this is wrong, you know, which is obviously the first step. But in terms of, there's no, oh, he's my mate, I won't say anything. I think everyone's really standing up for something bigger than themselves. And so I think, again, that's another really important movement. And it kind of shows from a negative scenario some of the positivity that's kind of come out of it.
Yeah, and I think as someone with, I guess you could put it, with a blue tick on Instagram, we do carry that influential status. So, you know, we do have people listening and watching what we're doing. So if we can be a small catalyst for change and be that leader in calling things out and not standing for something that we consider wrong or hurting of other cultures or other people. And I think you either embrace that or you just, you know, if you don't want to have an influence, then don't get on social media, because social media is so powerful these days that being, you know, in the spotlight, you've got to embrace it. And I want to use it for good. And personally, I want to use my social influence for good. And I just hope that all athletes hold that same mentality. And I think around this Tex Walker stuff, we are seeing that positive use of a voice. And not a lot of people have a voice. I mean, they do. It's just not loud enough to be heard. But we have a voice that can be heard. And I would like to think that we would step up and use it when we need to.
Love that. Very, very, very well said. On a much lighter note, what do you make of the current AFLW season running across essentially summer? It's not obviously not overlapping with the AFL men's season, but I mean, is that a challenge? Like, because obviously sometimes you're playing in like 30 degree plus heat.
It will be a challenge. I think there's going to have to be a sunscreen created that's like 60 plus or like 70 plus, because it's going to be that is a challenge in itself. Brisbane, Queensland definitely have the upper hand there in that even the Perth teams, that they literally have warm weather. Melburnians, you know, we've got four seasons in a day, so it'll be unique for us. But in terms of like it, in my opinion on when it's played, I like the concept that we're going to have free air, so just only we can be seen on the TV at the time. That's probably, I don't know, probably rules out everything else for me, in a sense of that playing in the heat. Like, it's going to we played one game in Darwin and I literally went looking for shade on the field because it was so hot. it does create that. Unique challenges. And also, like, I think people need to start realizing that we won't have a Christmas holiday. We won't have a New Year's. We work full, like I said, this we are normal people, and I say normal lightly, in a sense that there's no normal. What is normal? But like, people work full time, and their only holiday period is December, and now we've got something else. So we're literally on the clock all year round. There's no time to like kind of let the hair down and be, you know, go out and enjoy social events and not have to worry about getting up the next day and training. Like, we can't have a big bender because we've got to get up and train, you know, come Christmas Day. We can't enjoy just, you know, be like, oh crap, the bottle of wine's got a hole in it, I might as well just keep drinking it now. So there's a lot of challenges in it, and I think it's a case of trial and error, and we'll see how it goes. And If it's changed to another time period in different other months, I mean, I won't be too mad about it, because I would love a New Year's holiday. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. I'm, you know, a bit optimistic about it all, and the heat, and I'm going to have a singlet tan, which I know is like low on the priority list, but it still irks me.
Nah, it's high up there. With the blue tick comes great responsibility. Before we wrap up, so this episode is going to drop around AFL finals time. Who's your tip for the premiership and also the Brownlow?
Ooh, I think the Brownlow this year might end up being a tie. I think.
Oh, this is big. I like this.
Well, I think Petrarca will be up there. And then kind of, I think a dark horse might be Darcy Parrish. He's a little bit he's very consistent. I mean, his stats have been crazy, and I mean, numbers aren't everything, but, yeah, so I think it might be a duel between the Brownlow, maybe not those two players, but I predict that there's going to be a joint Brownlow. And in terms of who's going to be the... Thank you. Controversial calls over here.
Yeah, I like it.
The premiership will be, I think the Doggies, if they can sort out this Josh Bruce situation and who's going to fill his shoes. I mean, at this time we would have already known who's going to fill that, but I think the Doggies...
Look, I asked the big question, so I've got to accept your answer. But I think, me personally, I reckon Geelong. I mean, I don't know what the odds are, and frankly, the odds aren't that important. But I think Geelong are a big chance. But I think if Richmond can squeeze into the eight, I'd be worried playing them.
I think the dynasty's over, though. I actually think Richmond are not the Richmond we once saw. I don't know, something's in the water, because I just... Ooh. I can't see Richmond. If anything, it goes Dogs and then Geelong for me, 100%.
I'm hoping I can create a clip out of this, and then if, like, Richmond win the premiership next year, I'll do, like, a massive circle back to...
Hey, I'll eat my words if Richmond come out and make it, but I think there's... Well, as we speak currently, there's so much movement who's going to finish in the top eight, so they might not even be there. But if they are, I will happily eat my words. My words.
No, I love it. All right. Chloe, thanks so much for taking the time out of your very busy schedule to jump on the pod. You're a star, and I have a lot of respect for you and all of the AFLW players who are juggling a lot, and you are welcome back on the pod anytime.
Thank you, legend. You are also, it was a pleasure being on here because you are, in your own right, a very respected entrepreneur. You have a lot of little side hustles that I'm curious about, and also jealous. I want a side hustle.
We'll chat after the pod. Thanks very much.
Thank you.